You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
You're listening to the Co-Main Event Podcast. And now your hosts, Ben Folks and Chad Dundas.
That's right. You're listening to another episode of the Co-Main Event Mixed Martial Arts Podcast. I'm Chad Dundas. That's Ben Folks. We're both longtime MMA journalists, and for the last 11 years, we've been meeting here every week to break down all the action in the wild, weird, and occasionally wonderful world of mixed martial arts. Ben, it's Thanksgiving week. Got Thanksgiving coming up on Thursday. It's sort of like the kickoff of the holiday season. Isn't it just sort of the agreed-upon kickoff of the holiday season? I got family rolling into town. We're going to, you know, do it up with the bird and everything. Although I will admit there's been some conflict between the younger folks and the boomers about what exactly to do for Thanksgiving. I was wondering about you. Most of your family is out of the state. They don't live here. Obviously, you have your children and whatnot, but what are you going to do for Thanksgiving?
Well, I am going to cook a whole lot of food that my children will probably eat maybe 5% of when you get everything actually on the dinner table. I told both my daughters, I was like, name me one thing you absolutely want to see on the table for Thanksgiving dinner. Something that this is a binding agreement. You will agree to eat if I make sure it's at the meal. My oldest daughter said macaroni and cheese.
Okay. You can make that work for Thanksgiving.
You can do a slightly fancier version of the usual macaroni and cheese for Thanksgiving. Sure, I can work with that. The youngest one said rolls.
Okay. Yeah. No, so rolls. That's perfectly fine.
She's going to eat probably 3-4 rolls and call it good on Thanksgiving. You know what I'm not about to do over here for Thanksgiving, Chad, as I have not done for several years? I'm not messing around with a turkey.
Yeah.
The turkey,
understandable, frankly,
is garbage. It's just the worst part of the Thanksgiving meal. I don't know how we got started on that. I think that we should all give ourselves the freedom to move away from that. You'll recall, I think, maybe last year I did a prime rib, and that was excellent. I'm probably just going to mess around and do that again and maybe even improve upon my recipe last time, because I'm telling you, that was fantastic.
Prime rib is always good. I normally try to roll a prime rib out for Christmas. This year we were sort of like we're going to cook at my house to take the meal-making process out of the hands of my parents and put it in the hands of capable adults.
Wow.
And because we want to sit down and eat at some
point. Shots fired.
Right? We want to be able to have the Thanksgiving dinner some point before midnight. And so we're going to do it. And my brother and my sister-in-law, his family are coming to town. And so that brought up this whole discussion of like, do we even want to do the traditional dinner? Do we want to have the turkey? Because you're right about the turkey. I'm not going to say it's trash. I'm not going to go quite as far as
garbage.
Ben Folks. But like, it's not the greatest. It's not the best thing you can do. So we were talking about alternative Thanksgiving dinner. And then basically the boomers rolled in and they were like, we will riot. We will riot if we do not get our beloved turkey.
Really?
So, yeah, now things are a little bit up in the air. We have a turkey. We're trying to figure out if we can do a turkey and do some kind of alternative sides. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. But it's a lot of upheaval.
Yeah.
These are the Thanksgiving dinner.
Do you think this is sincere love of turkey, the dry ass bird that comes to ruin Thanksgiving? Or do you think it's just tradition?
I think it's hearkening back for days that never were. Right.
Wow. I'll tell you what. I did not come into this episode of the Co-Main Event expecting to hear such blistering attacks at your own family. Yeah, here we are.
Yeah, well, yeah, but you're going after the birds. You're going after the turkeys themselves. So,
you know, don't you think if you were a turkey, you would kind of be all for it if somebody spearheaded a campaign that you shouldn't eat us?
Yeah, you know, actually, good point. Good point. I didn't realize what I would say humanitarian, but that doesn't seem like the right descriptor. So friend of fowl.
Yeah.
Ben Folks. Anyway, on to business. We had UFC Fight Night, Allen versus Craig on Saturday night from the Apex down there in Las Vegas. Brendan Allen gets a pretty big middleweight win over Paul Craig. Dominant, if you ask me. We also had the night before on Friday, Bellator 301, a couple of new champions crowned, Jason Jackson and Patchy Mix in the welterweight and bantamweight divisions, and we will discuss, the irony of that a little bit later in the show, because we now know. Well, I guess it seems like Bellator will trundle on. It's rumored to trundle on as a zombie version of itself, according to the press release that came out from the PFL earlier today. So we'll talk about that coming up here a little bit later in the show. Sale to the PFL confirmed this morning. Let's say all that right up front. But yeah, we'll have a lot to talk about, even though it's a week that the UFC is taking off. They won't put a fight night on this weekend for Thanksgiving, but they return on December 2nd with a fight night that features, that's UFC on ESPN. We're going to have a Beneil Dariush fight Arman Tsarukyan in the main event of that. This is actually a decent card. You got Dan Hooker, Bobby Green, Rob Font, Davison Figueiredo, Sean Brady, Kelvin Gastelum, Punahela Soriano, Khalil Roundtree, you know, no names. Guys you know are on this card, so that might be one to look forward to. But we got enough pressing business this week to fill up this hour, so we're going to get on to all of that coming up in the next 60 minutes. Remember, though, you're listening to the Co-Main Event Podcast proper. This show drops every Monday afternoon for free in your timelines and your podcast libraries. But if you're not satisfied with this, if you're not sated, if you don't feel comfortable inside like you've just eaten a big Thanksgiving dinner, you can go ahead and check us out over on Patreon. Ben Folks and I are over there all week, most weeks, putting on a week of fabulous content. Patreon.com/co-main-event. We do audio, we do video. You can get access to the CME's official Discord message board. If you're curious, but you don't want to jump in all the way, everybody knows right now we're offering 7-day free trials at the $5 level. You can dip your toe in absolutely free. Check out all the content happening over there. Take a look and then decide if you want to join up for real. We don't have the backing of a big parent company or one of the MMA websites. We're just two guys talking into a microphone. We've been doing it for over a decade. We can only keep the show going with your support. Help keep the CME alive by joining up to become part of the community over at patreon.com/co-main-event. Another great way to support the show is by going to our website, co-main-event.com, and checking out our merchandise shop. We got all kinds of cool stuff over there. We already been suggesting you could pick up the Daddest Man on the Planet mugs for the guy in your life you don't know what to buy for come Christmas. I'll tell you what, people have been scooping up the Daddest Man on the Planet mugs, man. They're flying off the shelves over there. So we're happy about that. A lot of people going to get some good gifts this year.
Yeah. You know, just imagine the eyes lighting up Christmas morn when you unwrap that Daddest Man on the Planet, because you're looking at it and you're like, wait, does that say baddest man on the planet? I mean, I feel like I'm kind of a tough guy, but I don't know if that... Wait, no. Daddest man? Oh, I see what you've done here, and it's delightful.
Yeah, yeah. We got t-shirts, we got hats, we got hoodies. You can get it all over at the Co-Main Event Podcast merchandise shop. Go to comainevent.com and click the link at the top of the page that says shop. As always, we partner with our friends at Superconductor on the Shop. They are a brand and design studio from Portland, Oregon. We can't recommend them highly enough for all your design needs. Hit them up at studiosuperconductor.com or on Instagram at studiosuperconductor. We got music this week from our guy Dennis Pham, a self-described, quote, day one co-maniac from San Diego. He writes a song every few years. He's got a single out called The Fire, which you can find on Spotify and Apple Music and all other major music streaming platforms. We'll give you a taste of that today on the show. Three rounds, as usual, this week on the Co-Main Event Podcast. In round number one, Scotty Cokes suddenly wakes up with a start and realizes he's fallen asleep in his desk chair. He looks around and sees he's sitting in his office at Strikeforce. It's 2011, and he smiles to himself, thinking, wow, I just had the strangest dream. And in round number two, Brendan Allen runs his win streak up with a lopsided beating of Paul Craig. And I'm not sure what else to say about that. And in round number three, you know, it's funny how fighters go from being pretty cool about it right after a fight to immediately having opinions and making demands a few days later. Looking at you, Tom Aspinall. All that plus are you fucking kidding me and just saying stuff. But first, like we always do about this time, let's do a little bit of listener mail.
Listener mail.
This week's listener mail is once again brought to you by NordVPN. Have you signed up for your NordVPN deal exclusively through the co-main event? If you haven't, you really, really should. With NordVPN, you get the fastest VPN on the planet. NordVPN provides online protection with a single click. Don't miss your favorite content, even when you're traveling. Stay at home virtually. Stay safe from malware with threat protection. Ben and I both have it. We use it all the time. Ben, I know you like telling people about your favorite parts of NordVPN. What do you love about it?
Well, Chad, you know, my favorite part is the way it kicks on to protect you as you bounce from public Wi-Fi to public Wi-Fi, especially on those weekends where you're a man about town, as I was this week. We went to the Cat Grizz game, took it in there, watched our beloved Montana Grizzlies win a big game. Doesn't matter if you're standing in the parking lot of the press box bar, drinking yourself a Bud Light from a plastic cup at 10 o'clock in the morning. Doesn't matter, Chad, if you're then bouncing on over to the Albertsons to consider picking up a 12-pack of beer before you realize everybody else in the city had the same idea at the exact same time. Doesn't then matter, Chad, if you are popping into the local Taco Bell to get yourself right after a busy day of drinking beer, watching Grizzly football. NordVPN has you covered. You can also access Nord's amazing cybersecurity apps, including the NordPass Password Manager, helping you keep all your passwords straight and close at hand. And with the NordLocker encrypted cloud storage app, you can keep your files backed up, synced, and protected from snoopers, loss, or malware in its secure cloud. Nobody will see, touch, or sell them.
Sign up right now for any of NordVPN's handy two-year plans and get an additional 4 months for free by going to nordvpn.com/comain or use the code COMAIN. Just be sure you use those handy exclusive CME links. That's nordvpn.com/comain or use the code COMAIN, all one word. That includes all the two-year plans. Standard, plus, complete, whatever you go for. It's risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Get your exclusive NordVPN deal by going to nordvpn.com and use the code COMAIN. First piece of listener mail this week comes to us from Jay Gargiulo. He writes, Saturday night's UFC card was nothing if not skippable, but one matchup caught my attention. Chase Hooper versus Jordan Leavitt. Two lovably dorky grapplers with strong, quote, each other's only friend vibes.
Wow.
The fight did not disappoint, immediately descending to the mat with plenty of slick groundwork before Hooper locked up the rear naked choke just 3 minutes into the fight. His grappling is clearly excellent, and he said he felt much better at 155. What do you think the ceiling is for the no longer teenage dream at lightweight? Is it possible for a specialist to climb the ranks in such a stacked division? This is, you know what? This is a great point about Chase Hooper versus Jordan Leavitt. A couple of guys we can all agree on. Chase Hooper goes out there, gets the submission win in the first round. That's two in a row for him since he lost to Steve Garcia back in October of 2022. But of course, since then, he has moved up to lightweight and he's won these two in a row. Says he feels like it's a better weight class for him. I am not going to sit here and tell you that Chase Hooper is a former champion or future champion. We know he's not a former champion. I don't have to tell you that. I'm not going to sit here and tell you he's a future champion. But I think he's a fun guy that everybody likes and can have in the division. And you know what he's going to give you. He's going to go out there and give you a little bit of a fun fight with some fun grappling. He's going to win some. He's going to lose some. But I like having him around.
I like having him around, too. But if the core question here from Jake Argiulio is can a specialist climb the ranks at a division like lightweight, especially if that specialist is jiu-jitsu? Well, I don't know, man. I think that you could have some fun fights. You can put on some good performances that way. But are we talking, can you make it into the top five at lightweight with just jiu-jitsu? Sadly, I have to say no. Especially at that weight class. Because you're just going to run up against a lot of people who are going to be pretty good at not getting taken down. And it's not like Chase Hooper has amazing wrestling. And his striking, it's still in the realm that we would generously refer to as improved. You know, it's not blowing your hair back. It's not as bad as we've seen it, you know, when earlier in his development. He's still, you know, young guy, can still develop a lot in that area. But if you get up against some of the tougher dudes in this division, especially a lot of the guys who come from wrestling backgrounds, and there are many in this division, I just don't know if you're going to be able to get those guys down. And then if you can't, what do you do on the feet? That's the part. I mean, I agree that I like having him around. You know, I like having a dorky submission specialist. That is my whole shit right there. So obviously I'm glad we have a Chase Hooper around. I just don't know if with that alone, you can really, really ascend the ranks in a division like this.
Yeah. The good news is there's so many guys there at lightweight that you could probably put together a bunch of fun matchups for Chase
Hooper. If that's what the UFC wants to do for him. Because it does feel like, didn't it feel like what they were doing with the Jordan Leavitt thing? Where they're like, this guy likes to grapple. He's another kind of fun, offbeat sort of personality for the MMA space. Let's put them together and see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, that is what it is. But I'll just lay this on you right here, Ben. Drew Dober. Renato Moicano, Bobby Green, Benoit St. Denis, Jalen Turner, Rafael Dos Anjos. Did I say anyone's name that we think Chase Hooper could beat?
See, I thought you were going to suggest Drew Dober versus Chase Hooper, and I was like, don't do that. Don't do that to Chase.
No.
You know?
I wouldn't suggest that, but I didn't say any names that we feel like Chase Hooper could beat, correct?
Probably not, no.
That are the lightweights between 10 and 15 on the lightweight ranking.
Jesus.
So that gives you an idea what you're dealing with here in terms of the competitive nature of this division. But, like, I don't know, if you're Chase Hooper, obviously you want to be the champion. You want to ride as high as you can. You want to do the best you can. You want to make what you can out of your UFC career. Like, I don't know, man, fighting guys like Jordan Leavitt, getting on the main card, having people watch you, making some money. That seems pretty good for a guy like Chase Hooper.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, better to win that fight than to lose it, obviously. And he looked good in it and everything. So, yeah, no problem there. If you made Drew Dober go out there and fight Chase Hooper, he would knock him out and then he would post an Instagram pic where he has his shirt unbuttoned and his pants two sizes too small, but he's sad. He's sad about it. He's dreamy yet sad, and also promoting some kind of specialty coffee while he tells you how bad it made him feel to have to do that to Chase Hooper. So let's just not.
Yeah, no, I understand that I made you ride an emotional roller coaster there just by mentioning Drew Dober's name. Let me mention another name to you, though, and this is a guy that I am suggesting as a potential future opponent for Chase Hooper. I want to get your take on this. Patrick Angus Pimblett.
Okay, first of all, how am I finding out only now at this late hour that Angus is his middle name?
You know how you're finding that out? Because I just made it up.
Well, now I'm sad because now I was that brought me such joy.
No, I just looked at Patty Pimblett's Wikipedia page hoping to get a middle name, but it just says Patrick Pimblett, and I said, I thought to myself, I'm just making one up. Okay. I'm making it up. Angus, why not?
Well, that's a good one. You know, would watch the shit out of that. Do you think the UFC would, like, them booking Patrick Angus Pimblett against Tony Ferguson felt like them kind of being like, let's see if we can't get this guy a win that people feel like he actually deserved and that came against somebody that they'd heard of after, you know, the last did he, though, kind of win that he went out and picked up? And so, I don't know. Would they then turn around and be like, and now it's Chase Hooper? Like, I don't know if they want to be in the Chase Hooper business that bad, you know? Because I think he could beat, he could go out there and beat Patty Pimblett. I'd watch the hell out of that one, though. Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Next question this week comes to us from Darkwing Duck, who writes, is there a chance, as is being suggested, that Patchy Mix is the best bantamweight in the world? Discuss. We have been throwing this around in the space this week since Patchy Mix went out there at Bellator 301 and beat Sergio Pettis. Second round, rear naked choke, a great performance. He won and unified the Bellator Bantamweight World Championship. Let me lay on you, Ben, the names of the guys that Patchy Mix defeated as part of the Bellator Bantamweight World Grand Prix. He defeated Kyoji Horiguchi, Magomed Magomedov, and Rafion Stotts to win the Bellator World Grand Prix and the interim bantamweight champion. Then he turns around just a few months later. You know, he won the tournament in April, comes back in November, fights Sergio Pettis, beats him by second round, rear naked choke, win. So a nice run, frankly, for Patchy Mix. Is he the best bantamweight in the world? Well, that's one of the bugaboos here, having multiple different organizations that refuse to co-promote. Well, one of them refuses to co-promote. And so we don't get these big super fights that we might otherwise like to have. Is Patchy Mix the best bantamweight on the planet? Sean O'Malley might have something to say about that. But I can tell you with certainty that Patchy Mix is one of the best bantamweights on the planet. And for now, that's probably all we're going to know.
Yeah. Yeah, and that is the thing, is that when you look at a guy whose record is 19-1, you know, there's not too much information there to tell you absolutely he is not the best bantamweight on the planet. You just, it's hard to jump to that conclusion, especially when a guy comes in here riding a 6-fight win streak, and of those 6 fights, which, as you said, includes some good names, including a guy with not one but 2 Magomeds in his name, the only one of those 6 fights that went to decision was the one against the Gooch, Kyoji Horiguchi. Everybody else, he manages to go out there and finish, and doesn't need to go back past round 3 in any of them. So that looks pretty good. And it is a little frustrating to think that, okay, you might have somebody who could plausibly claim to be the best in this weight class, and you'll never get to find out because we're just, there's a hard barrier there that we're not going to cross probably until 5 years after somebody's prime and they get signed to a different organization or something. But I tell you what, as I'm sure we'll talk about when we get into our PFL Bellator conversation, it sure doesn't hurt to at least be able to get people to have the conversation in some of these weight classes, to at least get people to be like, hey, look, you know, and we know that it's plausible that this guy could beat the UFC's guy in this weight class. That's exactly the kind of debate you want people having, because it just gets you in the conversation, which is more than half the battle for PFL Bellator right now.
Yeah. Next question this week comes to us from John Mooney, who writes, were you surprised by AJ McKee's approach on Friday night at Bellator 301? He came out in the first and got taken down off a body kick. Fair enough. He was held down, but did his best to do damage from the bottom. And then in the second, he came out and after 30 or 40 seconds threw a body kick. And guess what happened? Then in the third, he came out and actually tried to take down Sydney Outlaw, and the same pattern repeated. Now, he clearly won the fight, as he was the only one doing damage, as Outlaw was doing a lot of holding, but his fight IQ was, in my opinion, poor, and seems like he isn't smoking guys at lightweight the same way he was at featherweight. What's his future, given the situation in Bellator? Now, first of all, you see these news reports out this week that AJ McKee seems legitimately a little bereft about the demise of Bellator. You know, he's a Bellator guy, practically born and raised out there in the Bellator cage. It seems like, you know, I'm sure he's got a bright future, right? He's going to go somewhere and do something. But he's, you know, just a little bit bittersweet maybe for AJ McKee to depart Bellator here.
You know, I'm glad somebody is bereft on Bellator's behalf. We were talking just last week on the, I believe on the Power Hour, we were talking about sort of the lack of eulogizing for Bellator. That usually when a promotion seems like it's going away, we saw it with Strikeforce, we definitely saw it with Pride, especially in the aftermath, where there's, as soon as it's going to be no more, there's a lot of love for the thing and a lot of affection from MMA fans. And it didn't really feel like we were getting that leading up to this Bellator event. So to have somebody who, born and raised in Bellator, be like, damn, this one hurts, I'm glad.
Yeah.
I'm glad that somebody like that would. As for the fight IQ question, I mean, again, I think that It's hard to look at a guy who has gone his entire pro career and only lost to Patricio Pitbull one out of two times that he faced him and have too much criticism, you know? Like, maybe, right. Like, is that the way you draw it up against Sydney Outlaw? Probably not. But you go out there and you get the win and you move on. So, I don't know. I can't sit here and be like, AJ McKee sucks, actually, because shit, he keeps fucking winning.
Yeah. I do think, however, that he seemed like he was on a bullet train to the top. Everybody was talking about AJ McKee after he wins the featherweight world championship and the Grand Prix back in July of 2021, his first win over Patricio Pitbull in their initial fight. And then he lost to Pitbull, as you said, in April of the following year. He's put together three wins in a row since then, but I kind of feel like he never got all that momentum back. He never recaptured the imagination or the spotlight, whatever you want to say, in the MMA world since then. Now, could he still? Absolutely. This guy's 28 years old. Obviously, he's an incredible fighter. He comes from a terrific MMA lineage with Antonio McKee as his dad. He's got a lot of open field still in front of him, a lot of green grass. He could still improve leaps and bounds and become a, you know, an even better fighter, an even greater fighter. And so while I agree that maybe he has, I don't even want to say lost a step, he's just lost a little bit of momentum in the public eye, he's still got a real bright future in front of him.
Yeah.
Last question this week comes to us from David E. Lotteray, who writes, I haven't heard anyone really talk about this, but will being on the workout shelf for several months cause John Jones to lose whatever extra muscle mass he put on in the last couple years? Would he realistically be able to gain it back in time for a heavyweight fight, or will he naturally revert to light heavyweight size John Jones? Wouldn't be the worst time to put the old singlet on and head down south, if you know what I mean. This is a fairly interesting question, but my initial take would be that John Jones was probably already cutting a fair amount of weight to get down to 205 in the first place.
Yeah, but it is a fair question in the sense that he made kind of a big deal about how much time and energy and effort was going in to building himself a heavyweight body.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, is it just leg day all the time now? Leg day every day for John Jones? Hey, he tore the pectoral. Wouldn't be the worst thing that could happen.
Yeah, it wouldn't be the worst thing for him if he just had to do legs for the next 8 months, right?
Yeah. I don't know. Because it is. And you wouldn't have to make too big a leap to go, hey, maybe all your focus on getting bigger and jacking that weight plays a role in you suffering a pectoral injury. But I don't know. I will be very interested to see what the timeline for return actually looks like here. Because in some senses, timing is an issue if you're still going to try to book him against old-ass Stipe.
Yeah.
Especially not only because Stipe not getting any younger, but also because the further out you go, the less interest there is going to be. Especially when somebody is like Tom Aspinall is in the mix, people are going to be calling for that more than they are to see, finally, can we get this John Jones Stipe fight? But also just that, like, if you're John Jones and you're kind of at this important crossroads where maybe this will be your last fight, maybe you'll just claim that this is your last fight, whatever. It's the one that's supposed to cement you as the UFC heavyweight champ. You don't want to rush back too soon from from a serious injury for that.
We'll get him out here doing calf raises. We'll have him doing deadlifts.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have him doing lunges.
Mad lunges.
We'll have him doing Romanian deadlift.
Whoa.
We'll have him doing glute bridges.
Brazilian deadlift, just a deadlift for every continent.
We'll have them doing hack squats. We'll have them doing barbell thrusters.
Can we do something where we put the chain on the bar?
We'll have them doing pause squats and sumo deadlifts.
Yeah.
We'll have them doing leg raises.
Well, it's still going.
All right. That's going to do it this week for listener mail. If you have a question, comment, or concern for the Co-Main Event podcast, you know how to get at us. Go to comainevent.com and click the link in the top right-hand corner of the screen that says email the podcast. That'll get you in touch with us. As for right now, though, we're going to go ahead and get started with round number one. Important question for you, Ben. Have you begun thinking about holiday gifts for the people in your life?
Naturally. I just assumed I'd put it off until it's too late to get anything good in time, and then I'd feel consumed by regret and shame. Why, did you have a better idea?
In fact, I do. You could go ahead and scoop up some Fulton and Rourke products. Seeing as how they are offering everything from gift sets to solid fragrances, even a bar of soap, they'll last you until Valentine's Day. Starting this Thursday, they also have some Black Friday deals. But here's the thing, and I'm not even sure I should say this, but their biggest Black Friday discount, it's still not as good as the 20% discount that CME listeners can get any day of the week if you just roll up there and use the promo code CME20.
Now that's interesting. Why is that, Chad?
Well, obviously, it's because they love the Co-Maniacs most of all. If you're looking for a great scent for the holidays, we recommend checking out Calle Ocho. It's a warm mix of aged rum, tobacco leaf, and sandalwood. It's perfect for colder weather. Check it out at FultonandRourke.com. That's FultonandRourke.com. And do not forget to use your promo code CME20. That's CME20. Well, Ben, I mentioned the irony at the top of the show, but I do just want to point out again that in the final event of Bellator, perhaps as we know it, we crowned two new champions, Patchy Mix at bantamweight, defeating Sergio Pettis, and Jason Jackson at welterweight, defeating Yaroslav Amoslov to become the champions there. We also went ahead and set up the final of the Bellator lightweight Grand Prix. Alexander Shabili beat Patricky Pitbull to advance to that. In theory, perhaps we still have another semifinal coming up, but we're led to believe this could be it for Bellator. The PFL sale finalized, released today, confirmed today. So we don't totally know what the future of this company is, despite the fact that the PFL is at least making overtures to the effect that Bellator will continue as part, what do they call it? The Bellator International Championship Series? International
Champions. A reimagined Bellator.
Reimagining Bellator, a reboot, you might say. I guess my first question is, are you buying that? Because we have heard this before, you know, as it relates to other companies that they, you know, whoever bought them is going to, they'll be fine. Business as usual, carry on, continue to run the company. And usually it's horse shit. Are you buying this from the PFL?
Short answer, no. I did see it being mentioned that, you know, because first of all, whenever you hear the thing of like, we bought this competitor and we're going to continue to run it as a separate brand, you go, okay, well, you would be the first one that actually did it that way rather than, you know, claiming to do it that way and then abandoning that plan. Now, I do think it's interesting some of the stuff that we've heard them say. The possibility has been raised that I saw online that, hey, they have broadcast agreements, especially overseas. Bellator still has these broadcast agreements in place, and so you're basically going to keep running it through 2024 to satisfy those agreements. Yeah. And then maybe get rid of it. Now, the big homie, Rodrigo Del Campo, posted this on Twitter where he went, he's getting this news from goddamn LinkedIn. He goes over to Don Davis, the PFL chairman's LinkedIn page, and sees his post kind of laying out what the plan is for this, which is for Bellator to be a quote-unquote one-off event product, like 8 events a year, like kind of just like a set series of like Bellator fights. And then we're going to try to do champions versus champions. Now, the champions versus champions thing, I think, actually is a kind of smart idea. If you already come into this situation, you know, why throw belts in the trash when they are more gold for you to put on the posters?
Yeah.
We know how people love that. Plus, you tell MMA fans a PFL title is going up for grabs and they go, okay. And you tell them a champion from one organization is going to fight a champion from another one and they go, I don't even care if I know who the two champions are. That sounds like a kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
You can just do way more with that promotionally. So you might as well do something like that. As far as, do I see us sitting here in 3-4 years time with Bellator still being a going concern run by PFL? Ain't no way.
Yeah.
You know it. I know it. The American people know it.
Isn't it a little strange and perhaps telling that the tweet, the official tweet from Bellator, the official corporate account, tweets out this tweet that says, we are now part of the PFL family.
This is interesting. Yeah.
And then the story they link to is a Financial Times story, Dateline Dubai, wherein the headline says, Saudi Arabia-backed Mixed Martial Arts League challenges UFC with Bellator deal. Not linking to MMA fighting, not linking to MMA junkie, not linking to Yahoo, even, you know, not CNN, anything like that. Financial Times, Dateline Dubai is the official story that Bellator posts.
Yeah, okay. See, I thought that was interesting too, because not only are you pointing outside the MMA bubble for this news, and it seems like, okay, they're pretty proud, I'm sure. You know, they come in a bunch of money men running an MMA organization. They get pretty psyched probably about a story in the Financial Times more than they get excited about a story on MMA Mania. You know, so I get it. I get it to some extent. But it was interesting how the headline and how the story itself framed PFL for people who, you know, audience that is not fight fans, and so maybe has never heard of PFL. And so they go, Saudi-backed fight promotion, which is supposed to meant to communicate to you, they have money. There's money behind this thing, and the money from the kind of people who have money to burn and are throwing it around in the sports space. Therefore, it's a big deal, a deal worthy of the Financial Times readership interest because of the money behind it. That's the thing you're trying to communicate there, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess you are. All right. Here's the meat of it for me. How strong does this make the PFL? Assuming that we eventually come to recognize both of these companies under the same banner, that it's all the PFL moving forward. How strong does this make the PFL? You add guys like Johnny Eblen, AJ McKee, Patchy Mix, who we talked about, Vadim Nemkov, Usman Nurmagomedov, the Pitbull brothers, Corey Anderson, Yaroslav Amosov, who obviously just lost, but is a well-regarded fighter. Chris Cyborg is over there. Alima Leigh McFarland, Leah McCourt, you know, some up and coming people, Sergio Pettis, Danny Sabatello, just Aaron Pico is one of these fighters. Probably should have mentioned him a lot sooner, but you know, if assuming that these guys can go back and forth now between Bellator and the PFL, how strong does this make that company? What kind of contender does it make that company?
I mean, you definitely got to think that it's an addition that really helps, just because of how many of those people MMA fans have heard of and how many interesting fights that you could book that get you across that threshold that is the big barrier for any organization not named the UFC, which is come up with a fighter pairing, a fight card with enough names on it that makes us go, oh shit, okay, what time is that on?
Yeah.
And not just like, I'll happen to see it, or, you know, I'll find out what happened later. Like, get us to think of it as appointment viewing, something that we definitely don't want to miss. And they can do it now through like a collective power of all those fighters. Whereas before, what the PFL has been able to do is having one or two fighters here or there that we care about and not always matched up against anybody else that we care about. Like, where we noted before, the thing that made the hugest difference for their search results is any fight card that had Kayla Harrison on it. And then if you didn't have Kayla Harrison, the numbers plummeted. And now you have a whole bunch more people you can just make some combinations there that will get people's attention. And that's the biggest challenge, really, for anybody who is trying to run any other MMA organization. Now, I saw in sort of the press release language and everything that we're doing, we're going to go ahead and kind of swing for the fences with the claims we're making, saying that you take two number twos and you put them together and you get basically a mega competitor for the UFC. I don't know about that. I don't know if the UFC wakes up to this news and goes, oh shit, this is for real now. I think the UFC still feels like the gap between one and two is so vast that even if two gets stronger, okay.
Right. Yeah, I don't think anybody's going to knock the UFC off the pedestal anytime soon, if ever. But at the same time, this does seem like a big deal to me, especially if the PFL is going to be in a place where I can easily watch it. If it's going to continue being on ESPN Plus, which I already have, and they're not asking me to add yet another streamer to my collection, pay another entrance fee to watch another MMA organization. If it's just on and they're going to have some quote-unquote super fights between, as we mentioned, guys like Patchy Mix, who might be among the best bantamweights on the planet, I will watch that. I will make a point to watch it. And that is more than I could have said for Bellator during its last couple of years when it was hidden behind yet another paywall. You know, it's over on Showtime. In my opinion, it wasn't always widely advertised when and where stuff was going to happen. And so I missed it a lot of the times. And yet whenever I tuned into Bellator, for the most part, I ended up thinking like, oh, you know, they have good fighters. Like, this is not a bad product. So if you put that in a place where it is more accessible to me than it used to be, I will probably watch it. And I don't know if I want to say that that's a slippery slope for the UFC, or I don't know if I want to say that the gap is narrower than perhaps they think it is. But I also think it's significant if there is another organization out there that puts on relevant fights that everyone can easily watch.
Yeah.
I think that shouldn't be underestimated, because that's not insignificant, I don't think.
And if you have a Saudi-backed organization that could negotiate for some of these free agents when they get up and maybe move fighter pay, just inch it up a little bit, gradually.
Yeah. Is this the end of the line for Scotty Cokes? We talked about this last week on the Power Hour over behind the Patreon page, but is this another UFC situation where we take Scotty Cokes on as the head of a zombie organization and basically just send him home to play Angry Birds for the next 2 years? Or do we see Scott Coker emerge yet again somewhere else to continue running some MMA organization at some level? Or does he just go back to California and while away the golden years here?
You know, I saw some quote from Don Davis, I believe, talking about how there was an offer for Scotty Cokes and his team to join the PFL, to join this new thing in some sense. He seems like he's got enough knowledge about MMA promotion at this point that it'd be a shame not to at least pick his brain a little bit, not to have him on the inside helping you out a little bit where he can. I don't know if he wants that. I don't know. Maybe Scotty Cokes feels like he could relax for a while. Maybe he doesn't need to be worrying about this shit anymore. I wouldn't blame him if he felt that way at this point, but there's a part of me that wants to see Scotty Cokes stay involved.
Yeah, yeah. All right, let's do Are You Fucking Kidding Me, and then we'll move on to round number two. Ben, what's your Are You Fucking Kidding Me this week?
Jed, have you heard this wild-ass story about the fighters and coach getting involved in a brawl at the UFC PI?
Yes, this was also going to be my Are You Fucking Kidding Me. So we have a joint Are You Fucking Kidding Me. You can go ahead, and then if you don't cover the ground that I want to cover, I'll add my 2 cents as well.
Well, I mean, it starts out just kind of being wild enough where you're like, any two fighters getting in a brawl at the PI. I mean, for one thing, not exactly unprecedented. The shit is a little bit precedented. And a little, you know, when they built the PI, they must have been like, well, it's only a matter of time for somebody goes in here and starts throwing hands. But the story gets weird where we get the coach involved.
Yeah.
You know, you get two female fighters. You get Jocelyn Edwards and Aylin Perez. And then we hear that it's Perez's coach who hit, maybe punched Jocelyn Edwards at some point. They're beefing with each other. The place where I get really interested is where Alex Davis, MMA manager for many, many years, Alex Davis shows up as sort of a third party where it seems like, you know, he doesn't really have anybody in this one. He just sort of got involved because he was there, happened to see it, and is going to give his version of events. Here's the quote that I love from him where he's talking about seeing this fight. I was sitting on the large octagon inside the PI, looking at my phone, when I heard yelling to my right. When I approached the cage, I saw Aylin and her coach on top of Jocelyn, so jumped in to break up the fight. When I went to help out and saw the male coach choking Jocelyn with a rear naked choke, and it was very deep. Now, say, I'm going to pause here. Because I appreciate, he's recounting to you a fight that where we're trying to kind of assess blame, basically. Who's responsible for the fight? Who behaved poorly? But we're also going to give you a big MMA commentary, basically, that when the coach went to choke her, he had it in there pretty deep. He was cranking on the choke, Davis says. If the choke was held on for much longer, it would have been a terrible scene. I'm not sure if she was fully unconscious, but she was close. When I got the coach off of Jocelyn, the coach was ranting and yelling, trying to continue the fight. I was trying to calm Jocelyn down because she thought she was still fighting. Now, this, I love how everything about it seems like an MMA fight that you can picture going on, except that it's a male coach on a female fighter. And what the hell are you doing, bro? Are you fucking kidding me?
Agreed. Now, here's what I was going to add also on the Alex Davis front that he later tweets out. The guy's name is Javier. I don't know how to pronounce his last name. Oyer Zabal, something like that. He says, here's Alex Davis's tweet. He said, I just ran into Javier at the event hotel. This guy confronted me with his group of friends, trying to call me a liar, trying to scare me, exclamation point. You are a coward. You have no business being among us. I am too old to be fighting scumbags in hotel lobbies, but fuck you, you asshole. To which I say, are you fucking kidding me? How are you going to try to fight Alex Davis in a hotel hallway, man? Yeah. Like, this is basically one of the venerable old grandpas of MMA, just out here. It even says in his bio, former Brazilian jiu-jitsu practitioner. Like, this guy's hung it up, man. He's just trying to manage fighters. He's out here trying to do his job, breaking up a fight at the goddamn PI, which I feel like is understandable if you saw one happening. How are you going to try to boss up on Alex Davis, man? That's just shameful. You fucking kidding me? How are you going to do that?
Fucking kidding me?
That's going to do it for round number one. We'll be right back with round number two.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Well, Chad, Brendan Allen went out there and made it look pretty goddamn easy on Saturday night when he submitted Paul Craig in the third round with a rear naked choke. This after pretty well dominating Paul Craig on the ground, which is not a thing a whole lot of people manage to do, especially when Paul Craig gets to be the bigger dude at middleweight, as he has been for a couple fights now. Brendan Allen, this was kind of a showcase fight for him. Came in as a pretty hefty favorite. I believe he was around a 4-1 favorite. But to go in there, to beat up Paul Craig a little bit, sliced him open with an elbow, got the submission on a guy who knows his way around some submissions. What do you think this means for a dude like Brendan Allen? Is this the fight where people go, okay, we will remember the name, take this guy seriously, get excited about his future? Or is it hurt by being on one of those fight night events where a whole lot of people probably were like, eh, I could skip this one?
Well, he runs his win streak to 6, which is not to be underestimated. I believe he is tied with DDP for the longest middleweight win streak now, which is, you know, somewhat important, I suppose, in the grand scheme of things at 185 pounds. You were right. I think he finished at plus 330 over Paul Craig. So this is not as though it was an unexpected turnout of a, you know, an unexpected outcome here with Brendan Allen winning, but he did make it look easy. He looked good in the main event of this fight night. And so we got to hand it to him in that. But again, right now, middleweight, it's not an exact carbon copy of lightweight, but they kind of have a thing going at the top of the middleweight division where it seems like there is a select group of contenders who are in the mix for title shots. And some of these younger guys, some of these guys who are still coming up have a ways to go before they break into real contender status. Not necessarily in the cage, because I feel like these guys may be just as good as the guys who are at the top, but it just seems like perception-wise and what the UFC is willing to promote, these guys have a little ways to go, and it seems like Brendan Allen is one of those guys. And it just reminds me over and over again how many guys the UFC has. Because they have, you know, across many different weight classes, they have what, 10 Brendan Allens? 20 Brendan Allens? So many Brendan Allens, sometimes you can't even tell them apart. 23-5, long win streak, 27 years old, comes from a great camp. And they just have, you can't swing a dead cat in the UFC without hitting a guy like that. It's almost like there are two circuits. Like you have the championship circuit of all these guys you know, and then you have these really, really good fighters who are still sort of trying to make a name for themselves, trying to get some opportunity and attention and all this other stuff. So like Brendan Allen, this is a great win from him. He nudges ahead in terms of that struggle. I think he's came into this fight rated number 10 in the middleweight division, so he's knocking on the door. But it just seems like there are these two tiers of guys in the UFC, and I would still say that even though he's plenty good enough probably to be in the A tier, he's probably still in the B tier.
Yeah, he also, though, does kind of have time on his side, right? I mean, Brendan Allen, right now, 27-year-old dude, we've turned 28 in December. But to be sitting there at that point, you know, having been in the UFC now for, what, around 4 years or so, that's a respectable arc where it seems like he's still getting better when you see him. It seems like he still has a lot of improvements that he can make, but also seems like fighting with a ton of confidence out there.
Yeah.
And he also, when you look around at who else you have at middleweight and what kind of fighting styles and stuff you see at middleweight, he does seem to bring a little something different to the table. And I like that possibility. I mean, especially because you get him in there against some of those higher-ranked guys, and you could see, like, just interesting stylistic matchups that might well go his way.
Yeah. I know you want to talk about the calf slicer.
Yeah.
I hear Mr. Jiu-Jitsu, Mr. Grappling. This is about Paul Craig's one offensive move that he pulled off in this fight. He tried for a calf slicer that looked like it was, you know, looked like he had it, but then Brendan Allen defended well, spun out of it, got into a heel hook scenario that allowed him to get out of it and get back on top. But, you know, I'm not going to argue with some guy trying to pull out a calf slicer. In the main event, I'm sitting there. My eyes have borderline glazed over from all the UFC that has already happened. And then suddenly calf slicer. Well, now you have my attention.
Well, yeah. And especially Paul Craig's jiu-jitsu game, it has to be a little opportunistic. Because he's not always necessarily, it's not like he is dominating people by takedown, improving position, you know, solidifying position and grabbing the submission. He has to sometimes be able to pull some stuff off from his back, places where you don't expect it. He's been able to do that pretty successfully at times in his UFC career. And you're right, it was the closest thing he had to a moment in this fight. And Brendan Allen wisely remembers that, you know, kind of like When you look into the void also looks into you, Chad. It's like the guy who's going after your legs in a leg lock also needs to think about where his own legs are at that point. And so it was honestly, especially for me, one of the more interesting exchanges in the fight is where we're both just fucking around with various leg locks back and forth on each other. And you could tell what fighting nerds the commentators are here by, because at some point, you know, they have this exchange, they're going back and forth, they get up, and I think it was Brendan Fitzgerald who was like, this is what we came for. And it's just like, can you imagine somebody who's not a, like a big time MMA fan being like, really? That was it? I was under the impression we were just like leaving each other's heads cracked open, all types of blood leaking out of his head, God. And instead you're telling me that what you're excited about is two guys taking turns grabbing onto various parts of each other's legs?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I mean, if Josh Barnett was watching, he was probably pumped.
Yeah.
Josh Barnett was Leonardo DiCaprio pointing at the screen gif at that point. You know, the finish of this thing, which they showed in slow motion after the fight was over, was just nasty. Going, I think he went left hook to the body, then upstairs with the right hand to floor Paul Craig, and then he locks in the choke and gets the finish. That was just a hell of a sequence there from Brendan Allen, and I think showed us a little bit of what he's capable of. Another thing that he was capable of was putting on a fur cap.
Yep.
That looked like he was about to jump on a dog sled in order to get home after leaving the arena. And, you know, cuts a fairly capable promo in the aftermath of this thing. He called Khamzat Chimaev, Cumshot Chimaev. And there's that. So I don't know that I can endorse everything he said. But it wasn't bad for a guy who's out here trying to make waves, trying to get people to remember him. It wasn't bad at all.
You know, one thing I learned from that interview? Brendan Allen, he's gonna speak up for his boys.
Yes, he
got
was.
A lot
that
of boys.
That was the most relatable and touching thing about it, I thought, was that he made sure to mention his guy who's going to cause problems at 205. Let's get him in here.
It was just one sentence after another. My boy, this guy. My boy, that guy. That, my boy. You were just like, hell yeah. I mean, here's where it pays off to be boys with Brendan Allen. He's going to get your name on the broadcast, even though you didn't fight.
100%. 100%. All right, that's going to do it for round number two. Let's go ahead and move on to round number three. Well, Ben, I'm going to start off round number three with this question that we got from Eric in Toronto, who writes, "Fellas, I'm troubled by the heavyweight title picture at the moment. John Jones might be out for 8 months, a year, 4 years, infinity, who knows. Henry Cejudo's saying he wants to see Jones next for Tom Aspinall. Dana White's still talking about John versus Stipe next. Aspinall's out here talking about Gon versus Almeida. Isn't Big Tom missing a golden opportunity? He could be the first interim champ to actually defend his belt since Henan Barao? Please discuss. Thank you." Now, we do have a bit of a mess up here at heavyweight, and frankly, heavyweight is no stranger to having a mess. So we've kind of segued back into the default setting of heavyweight here to just have a mess at the top of the division. But with John Jones out and apparently still going to fight Stipe Miocic, and Jailton Almeida still a little bit on the come up here at heavyweight, and Sergey Pavlovich having just been dispatched by Tom Aspinall, what do we do here? What's the way forward at heavyweight at the moment?
Yeah. I mean, I think the most important thing to know would be what the timeline is actually going to be for a John Jones return. Because if it's going to be a long time, I could see you making a case for just being like, we can't have Tom Aspinall as an interim champion for a year. You know, like you want, especially at a time where you have the rare problem of having too many interesting heavyweights. Especially young heavyweights, and you could do some stuff. And so you don't want to just be sitting around, especially still talking like the fight we're going to make once everybody is healthy doesn't even involve Tom Aspinall. So what are we even doing? What was the interim belt for? Was it just to put gold on one poster?
Yeah.
Sure as shit wasn't because we felt like we were going to need five rounds. I'll tell you that much. When Tom Aspinall and Sergey Pavlovich went on there and fought. So I don't know. It does seem like you need to know when you could be actually looking at having John Jones back so that you know, like, if it's a waste of time to just sit around here and pretend like the heavyweight title fight is still going to be something completely different.
Yeah, it wouldn't be the first time that the UFC had made an interim title just so it could have some gold on the poster. I don't think it would be kind of business as usual for the UFC, but you're right. It does seem very weird to have an interim title fight and then an interim champion if you are still going to have a different title fight when the champion returns, if John Jones versus Stipe Miocic is going to be a fight for the regular old heavyweight championship, then it didn't really make sense for you to have an interim championship because, as we have said before, when things like this have happened, what you really had was a number one contender fight.
Yeah.
And you decided to put the belt on the number one contender for the time being. And that is not to undermine anything that Tom Aspinall has done. All he can do is fight the fights that are available to him. And if they're like, hey, Tom, here's the interim title, far be it from him to be like, nah, I'm good. Don't want it.
Yeah.
I'm doing okay. I'll just wait to get my hands on the gold. Because, I mean, at least if you've got the interim title, you are in most cases somewhat assured of eventually fighting for the actual title, which in the UFC, man, you better take any assurance that you can.
Yeah.
That you are going to get the fight that you want at some point. So that there is all that. I wanted to get to this quote here by Tom Aspinall, who is, the ink is barely dry on the fight card where he won the interim heavyweight championship. And here he is on the Michael Bisping podcast over on YouTube talking about stripping John Jones of the title. He says, I think John Jones should be stripped from the title, to be honest, because everyone else does when they get injured like that. I don't see why he's still got it. I don't understand that. I should be the real champion now. It's hard to say without sounding rude, but who's about John Jones and Stipe Miocic anymore? Why do we get this legacy fight? And they get to live by their own rules. What's a legacy fight? A retirement fight for a title? I want to fight Stipe, and then I want to fight John Jones. I think all this other stuff is rubbish. Stop protecting him now. Stop protecting your boy John Jones at the top. If he's injured, get out of the way, and I'll fight Stipe. So, you know, realizing he's in a position where he can make some statements and perhaps try to make some demands. Here's your guy, Tom Aspinall, going out and doing just that, which I understand. Again, you get in that position in the UFC, man, maybe you should take it. Because there's no guarantee that you will be there for very long or you will be back again. And so I guess my only question is he right?
You know, I appreciate he doesn't want to be rude. He understands. That's hard.
Look, man, he doesn't want to be rude, but yeah. If there's some rubbish, Tom Aspinall's going to call out that rubbish.
He once again runs into the familiar problem of how to tell the truth without being rude. And I think that he walked the line actually pretty well here because it's hard to disagree with a lot of what he's saying. Like, why are we holding on for this fight, which the further out we get from the original plan for Stipe versus Jones, the less compelling it starts to feel, especially when you went and created an interim title, had two meaty men slapping meat. Tom Aspinall gets the knockout. People are excited. They want to go, okay, now what? What do we do with Tom Aspinall now? And if your answer is going to be have him wait a year and a half to fight the winner of Stipe versus Jones, who, by the way, depending on how that one goes and how the breaks go, the winner either way might retire. And then you will have Tom Aspinall sit around in his prime for what? Like, that just doesn't make any sense. So I totally get what he's saying. He's also wise as far as how the UFC likes to treat these situations to position himself in the place of saying, I'll fight whoever in the meantime. Oh, John Jones going to be out. You can't do that Stipe fight. Stipe wants to fight somebody with a belt around their waist. Give him to me. I'll fight Stipe. Fight somebody else, whatever. Like, that, I think, is a wise way to go about it because I think that right now what people are going to be most excited about is seeing Tom Aspinall get in there because young heavyweight, a lot of momentum. You want to see how far he can go.
Well, it would have been an insult to ask Stipe Miocic to take part in an interim title fight, Ben. I don't know if you heard that.
I did hear that. Didn't believe it then. I don't believe it now.
Yeah, especially when Stipe Miocic came out later and was basically like, I would have done it. I don't know why they didn't ask me. I would have done it in a heartbeat. Anyway, fun times at heavyweight, albeit perhaps unclear times. All right, let's do Just Saying Stuff, and then we'll get out of here for this week. Ben, I know we talked about this last week behind the Patreon page, but I did want to bring it up again. And this week, I'm just saying, thank God for dudes like Bill Burr.
Oh, and his wife. Was going to be my just say. We got a joint. Are you fucking kidding me? And a joint Just Saying Stuff.
Maybe it says something about the headlines this week, but we can both chime in here. Thank God for guys like Bill Burr and his wife, actress Nia Renee Hill, out here flipping the double bird to Donald Trump as he walks into the recent UFC pay-per-view. And as I was reminded by an email this week, I can't remember who we got it from, but that it's the double bird, but around these parts, we might just refer to it as the Stockton Hay Buddy.
Yep.
That's what we were doing out here. Bill Burr, he goes on the Rich Eisen show, and he says, quote, "I love my wife. You know where you stand with her. This guy walked in the arena. Everybody cheered. She gave him the finger. Nobody got arrested. That's why this country's great. Everybody expressed themselves. Can we all be adults?" He says, "I don't know about you, but I came there to go to the fights. I didn't know I was going to the Republican National Convention."
Yeah.
So here we are in the UFC, where you're allowed to say and do whatever you want. So thank God that Bill Burr is out here and his wife flipping the double bird to cast at least a dissenting opinion for having some of the worst people in the country walk out and be hailed by the audience.
Yeah, I do appreciate him giving us that perspective of saying, you know, hey, I came to watch some dudes fight in a cage, and then the four horsemen of the Republican apocalypse come walking out, and we're making a great big deal about it, and you're looking over and being like, okay, that seems like we're certainly taking a political side here and trying to make a statement. I didn't know that's what's going on. But also, I appreciate his comment, a point that's been made before, but I'm just saying is still a relevant one. It's like those Trump guys, they're always going, "You snowflakes, F your feelings," and all that. And then when you make fun of Trump, they're like, "Oh my God, that's so disrespectful." Which, yeah. It's reminds me of some other people who we talk about sometimes who like to make sure that there are never any standards applied to their behavior, their speech, anything like that. But when somebody they don't like is saying something, maybe somebody toward them, then they suddenly have a lot of thoughts as to who should be allowed to say what. I'm just saying.
I just wish these scumbags in the media would keep politics out of MMA.
Yeah, they're ruining it. Wish.
Ruining it. All right, that's going to do it for this week's co-main event podcast. We'll see you next week. We'll have a shortened week over on the Patreon. I think we're going to have Wednesday's live chat, and then Thursday we'll have a special episode of Doing
Very Special,
where we recount our experience going out to the Montana Grizzlies versus Montana State Bobcats in the big rivalry game last
weekend. A live scene report, special guests,
live
all
scene
kinds
report.
Of stuff.
Indeed. So we'll have that, and then I think we'll take Friday off due to Thanksgiving, but we'll be back right here a week from today for the proper, and then a whole additional week of Patreon content. So check us out over there, patreon.com/co-main-event. As for right now, thanks for listening, everybody. We are done. We are through. We are out. So are you going to double up? Are you going to prime rib it for Thanksgiving and then prime rib again for Christmas? Or are you going to come up with a different...
Do something totally different for Christmas.
Because, see, I would not argue with back-to-back prime ribs, but also... I mean, you can't do the prime rib all the time, man. You've got your body to think of, especially you with the summers, just coming off the summer of swole.
Yeah.
You gotta maintain. You gotta maintain your gains, brother.
The summer of swole took a hit during the fall of respiratory illnesses, thanks to the public school system. But yeah, don't worry, we're getting back on it.
Yeah, you'll be back.